Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the MPS Limited Q3 FY20 earnings conference call hosted by Fortis Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitesh Kumar. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Q3 FY20 earnings conference call of MPS Limited. We have from MPS, Mr. Rahul Arora, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Sumit Malhotra, CFO and Company Secretary, and Mr. A. Sakdiwal, Financial Controller. We'll now request Rahul to give his opening remarks. Over to you, Rahul.
Good morning, everyone, and a warm welcome to Q3 FY20 earnings call. We'll start the call with some opening remarks and open it up to questions. FY20 is turning out to be a difficult year for us, primarily due to a decline in our core publishing business, and Q3 was no different. Our revenue at a consolidated level was down by 16.5%, and on an FX-adjusted basis compared to the same period last year, and was recorded at broadly 84 crores. EBITDA margin was suppressed at the 22%-23% levels in Q3. Approximately 85% of the decline in Q3 is due to a decline in the publishing business. We expect FY20 to be a soft year for MPS, and while we have been diligently working toward a recovery in Q3 and Q4, the trend is expected to continue well into Q4. The core publishing business is under pressure through a combination of factors, largely due to market dynamics and large customer-specific events. On the market side, education publishing, as we all know, is a cyclical market, and the average wave of expansion and contraction is 3 years. 2019 was the first year of a contraction phase, and MPS is diligently holding its position, while some of our competitors have seen a massive decline in the education publishing business. On the journal side, we are amidst a price war, which has benefited some of our customers and hurt us in the short term. We've also seen reduced relevance of certain business units, such as Yellow Pages and Digital Solutions, that is focused on converting backlist content to contemporary formats. On the customer side, we are seeing customer consolidation as a major event that has slowed things down. We also, within Q3, had a contractual settlement with one of our journal customers. Finally, there has been a relentless drive by one of our large customers to reduce spend on content production. Keeping Vision 2023 in mind, there are several developments underway to reinvent and transform the publishing business in the form of organization development and new initiatives. Meanwhile, the acquired business of Tata Interactive continues to gather momentum, and in hindsight, the decision to diversify and enter the adjacent e-learning market was well-timed and much needed in the enhancement of our mission statement from helping make publishing smarter to helping make learning smarter. We can now open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Devanshu Bansal from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Rahul. Thanks for the opportunity. Rahul, our headcount has increased in the content solutions business despite a decline in the business. So is it in anticipation of some deal ramp-ups here?
No.
Okay. So what are your medium-term outlook in terms of the three segments you operate in?
Yeah. So like I said, the year is going to continue to be rough into Q4. Next year, we expect content solutions to hold its positions from this new base, and hopefully, in the second half of next financial year, to pick up. We're expecting solid growth on the learning side. If you look at the business, from what we acquired, we're about 30% down in revenue in terms of the business that we had acquired. So for us, the next milestone is, of course, going to be the recovery of that gap of 30%. We're hopeful that we'll be able to cover a substantial piece of that gap in the next financial year. On the platform side, a large component of the platform business is publishing platforms, and there's a small component of TopSim in there as well. We expect TopSim to again grow at a better clip than the publishing platforms, and the overall platform business to get some 10-12% type of growth.
In Q3 last year, we saw some seasonality related to TopSim. In Q4 last year, we saw some seasonality related to TopSim business. Is it expected to repeat in this year's Q4 as well?
So overall, the business, so whatever we're seeing in Q3 should potentially continue into Q4 is what we're expecting.
Okay.
For Q4.
So what was the contribution of TopSim in the platform side? Was it in line of 5 crore run rate or?
So I can't, for competitive reasons, we can't break out product-specific revenue. It's a very competitive, as you know, it's a highly competitive market. We don't see any value in sharing product-wise revenue.
Okay. Rahul,
sorry
one more.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr.
Yeah, yeah.
So may we request that you return to the question queue?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in this conference, kindly limit your questions to 2 per participant. If time permits, you can come back in the question queue for a follow-up question. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Barjatia from HNI Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for providing the opportunity. So, Rahul, just as a matter of fact, we both are from the same ISB class, and I'm sure we must have met on the ISB campus. So it's heartening to see one of the front doing so good in life. I have two questions. One is that, can you briefly explain me, what is the different kinds of service or activity that you service and your competitor service, and which kind of services we don't provide, and what is our competitive positioning within different line of activities within publishing segment?
What I'll do is I'll explain, thank you for your comments. What we serve and within those markets, what are our offerings and business segments. MPS, if you look at our overall market, we service the global publishing market, and we service the global corporate learning market. Within publishing, our focus is largely academic and STM publishers that is basically research content being published. That's one segment. And the other big segment is educational publishing. So that includes K-12, higher ed and professional education. So it's more focused on the research and learning side when it comes to publishing. On the learning side, we work with large corporates across the globe, including North America, Europe, Middle East, India, and APAC. But we also work with continuing education universities and other educational institutions that are focused on professional education. Now, those are the markets that we serve. In terms of our offerings, we provide content services that basically includes content authoring, content development, content assembly, transformation, and delivery of content. So essentially, taking an idea to execution, and of course participating in a turnkey way, but also participating in all the intermediate steps from an idea to delivery on the content side. On the platform side of our business, we essentially have a platform ecosystem, one of which is focused on content development. Another one is focused on content distribution and delivery, which is Think360. And then we have MacPlus, which is on the same activities but optimized for the mobile world. And finally, we have, you know, some learning platforms that help, that are focused on the corporate learning market. So that's broadly, you know, our market focus and, you know, how we service those markets with our offerings.
But in the publishing services business, is there a difference in terms of offerings, in terms of, you know, market reach of offerings between you and competitors, or it's exactly same? You also cater to the all market and competitors also cater to all segments of the market within publishing segments.
So the, on the publishing services side, there, you know, there will probably 4 to 5 players, you know, and who are significant in scale and similar in scale. You know, most of them are India and US based, and one of them also has presence in the Philippines. In terms of differentiation, I think a lot of the differentiation is on how clients perceive us. So between the 4 or 5, they have an identity for each of us in their minds. Additionally, I think each of the four vendor partners has a specific edge. I would say the MPS edge on the publishing services side is more linked to automation and system-based delivery. And of course, some of our competitors are more focused, for example, on, you know, customer intimacy and those type of things. So our value proposition on the publishing side is more linked to operational excellence, which is derived from, you know, automation and system-based delivery. So that's how we are on our identity is on the publishing services side. And of course, then outside these 4 to 5 players, there's this, you know, huge middle layer of companies in the 5 to $15 million range. There's about 20-25 companies operating in that range. And then following that is another tail of sub $7-8 million in revenue. And that tail could be well in the hundreds in terms of number of players. It's a highly fragmented market.
Right. Okay, I think, so, you know, secondly, we have seen, you know, historically...
Sir, can you speak a little away from the mic? Because
yeah, sure.
Your voice is echoing.
Sure. Is it fine now?
Yes, sir, this is a little better. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, historically, we have, the whole industry, publishing services industry has seen good growth somewhere between, you know, FY12 to FY14-15. Just wanted to understand, you know, what has happened during that time frame and what can trigger growth going forward. You know, what kind of changes can happen which can trigger growth for the whole industry as such?
So I think vendor consolidation has been a primary driver of growth during that time frame.
So for the industry, I'm just talking about the industry, not for the individual players.
Yeah, I'm talking about industry as well.
Okay.
So to explain that a bit better, when I say vendor consolidation, I mean if a publisher is working with 9 vendors, then they first start to work with 6, then 5, then 4, then 3, you know, to that level of, so that type of consolidation where customers are consolidating their supplier base, that has been the predominant driver of growth of individual players, firstly. From a macro perspective, I think as publishers find that the juice that they can derive from consolidation is saturating, and they start to identify new areas of outsourcing, because in any publisher's world, if you look at their overall spend, 50 to 60% on the content development and production side. 50 to 60% of their spend is organized, where they're working with as part of a procurement program, and the balance is highly disorganized, spread across freelancers, friends of friends, mom and pop stores, small shops. So one is, of course, you know, is there an opportunity for the balance disorganized spend to get organized? So we're having those type of conversations with them. But it's been a slow and gradual process. And fundamentally then, does this pie increase as publishers come under even more pressure? Because we're seeing, especially on the educational publishing side, for example, they're moving from a product, you know, in selling individual products to selling subscriptions. Basically the Netflix model. So previously, you know, an educational publisher would sell a textbook for $120, and now they're selling a subscription, all access subscription for $9.99, that gives the student complete access to everything that they have. So as the business models shift, their ability to, you know, deliver to that business model will also have to change. So that could be a significant driver in for the industry. Another driver, of course, is publishing in general is ripe for disintermediation. We're already seeing that on the continuing education and professional education side, where small community colleges and professional institutions are basically taking a call and saying that, do we really need to work with a commercial publisher, or can we actually go upstream and work with partners that are actually powering the publisher operations? So I think three things. One, of course, you know, continued vendor consolidation, that should be opportunities for players. Second, organizing the disorganized spend and increasing the pie of spend by doing new type of outsourcing. And then finally, some disintermediation play where we start working with our customers.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I have a little bit, I will come back in the question queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yogan Jaswani from Mittal & Co. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I wanted to get some more clarity.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Jaswani. Sir, can you speak a bit louder? We are not able to hear you.
Hi, is it better now?
No, sir, it's still the same.
Hello?
Yes, sir, please go ahead.
Yeah, better now?
Sir, yes.
Yeah, so, hi, sir, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I just wanted some more clarity on the platform solutions business and the degrowth that we have seen. Because in past, if I'm not wrong, the management's commentary wasn't so weak when we, but whereas when we look at the current quarter's number, it's very weak. So did we lose any client, or is there a one-off also included in this?
No, so on the platform side of the business, it's more to do with commercials than clients. So we have not been able to successfully add customers as we hope to. Previously, you've heard us be more optimistic about, you know, adding customers every quarter, every year, on a continual basis. Things have been very, very slow and gradual. So the addition has been minimal. And even within the existing, given that, you know, our existing customers are not doing well in their business, we've had some squeeze on pricing and commercials on the platform side.
Okay, and would you be able to quantify the squeeze in pricing? Like, was it 10-15%? How much was the pricing pressure?
That's competitive information. I wouldn't be in a position to share that.
Sure. Similarly, on the content side of the business, if you could throw some more light on why this degrowth?
Like I explained earlier in the opening remarks, it's a combination of market and combination of large customer-specific events. On the market, education publishing is going through its cyclical trough, which it does every few years. We've seen in general on the journal side a huge price war take place, where, you know, publishers continue to squeeze the pricing, and unfortunately MPS has not always succeeded, and hopefully that will change in the coming months and coming quarters. And on the customer side, as we know, we have a large customer concentration where, you know, about 80% of our revenue comes from 10 accounts and 90% of our revenue comes from some top 15 accounts, especially on the content side. We've seen, some of our customers are consolidating their businesses, and as they do that, they are looking at, you know, product overlaps between the consolidation. So they are reducing the amount of product they produce. And we're also seeing, a relentless drive by two of our large customers in terms of how much they spend every year. So that's hurt us because we're not that diversified. And then finally, with one of our customers, we've had a contractual settlement linked to volume-based discounts, which has been an ongoing negotiation for a few years now. And that took place in Q3, and that's shown in the results. and that would be approximately somewhere between 1.5 crores to 2 crores, which is a one-time event.
Okay, understood. So basically, if I understand correctly, it's more to do with the pricing pressure and customers cutting down on their expenses rather than losing a customer, right?
Plus,
we have lost business from because of the pressure.
Yeah, plus reduce because they're producing less product.
Right, fair enough. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Keshav Garg from Counter Cyclical Investments Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Sir, I wanted to understand, sir, that our turnover on standalone basis of last 12 months has gone down to FY15 levels. And sir, our operating profit has gone back to 6 years back what we were doing. Sir, so what's the reason for this and how long is it going to continue whatever you are seeing, pricing pressure and so on?
Yeah, so on the revenue side, we expect this to continue into Q4. We expect then that to be the new base that we hold for the first half of next financial year, and hopefully from there on, things should pick up. In terms of profitability and margins, because a lot of this decline has come in a very short period of time, we've had little opportunity to adapt, but from Q1 of next financial year, we'll start to see that change and margins will again start to pick up once we adapt to this situation, because, you know, and then our largest contributor to expenses is manpower cost, and it takes time to adjust, which is almost like a fixed input. So it takes time to adjust when you have these large events take place.
And sir, also, sir, are there any plans to do a share buyback, sir, considering the fall that our share price has seen? And sir, maybe in future, if you are expecting growth, then if we can buy back shares at this cheap price, so then the future, whatever growth will come, will get divided on a smaller base of shares. So what are your thoughts on that?
I can't share any forward-looking statements. All I can say is that, you know, the management and the board are always evaluating opportunities that are in the best interest of all stakeholders for the company. But I can't share any forward-looking statements yet.
Okay, sir. Please consider it. That's my point. Thank you, sir.
Yes. So I'll definitely take your point into consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Anuj Sehgal from Manas Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Rahul. Just wanted to understand how you talked about the disruption and the disintermediation in the publishing business, with respect to consolidation and people going the Netflix model in terms of subscriptions and all the other changes. So how do you think, so in the past, MPS was a beneficiary of the consolidation of the vendor base. But how do you see MPS place now with this new disruption and disintermediation which is taking place in the content solution business? And then secondly, on the e-learning business, you mentioned about the 30% gap down in the revenues. So what is your timeline for it to sort of get back to the level that it used to do in the past? And then lastly, there have been some board changes at the board of directors level. Can you highlight as to what is causing that change?
Oh, sure. So I'll take that one by one. So the first question, MPS. So let's step back. We said, MPS used to play the role of a if I can call it a price warrior, and all this chaos taking place in the market would benefit MPS. So nothing has changed. I think what's happened is, in terms of our ability to do that, I think what's happened is that unfortunately we've had that take place with our existing customers. So when you have an existing customer tell you that we need a heavy shave, it takes time to react to that, and in some instances, that's hurt us. Additionally, what we have not been successful at is when we get those price warrior type of opportunities with new customers, I think it's not that that we're not able to do that. I think as a team, we've been not as aggressive as we need to be, and that's been definitely something that we've reflected upon, and going forward are correcting that strategy. We had a lot of success being the price warrior, and always in hindsight we thought that did we leave some money on the table by doing that. And we were trying to sort of correct that strategy. What's basically taken place is that in our large accounts, we've seen, some revenue loss because of price cuts. And on the new accounts, we have not been able to add much. That should change, as things settle down on this new base. We do have some upcoming RFPs and tenders coming our way, and we definitely plan to significantly sharpen our pencils on some of them. So that should benefit us. On the learning side, I'm hopeful that we will be able to capture most of that shape, 30% shape next year. It all depends on, a few large deals that we're working on. We'll know more in Q4 and Q1. We'll basically know in the next 6 months. And we should be able to share that with you in the coming 6 months, whether we won those deals or not. There's lots of big deals that we're working on the learning side, but again, things could go either way, so we'll have to wait and watch. But regardless, we are confident that most of that 30% shave should get captured next financial year. And if we're lucky in a couple of cases, we could even surpass that. But again, it completely depends on those very specific deals that we're working on. But there's enough volume of deals, and there's enough depth in each of those deals to help us get there. And then on the board side, basically we've had we've introspected, we've had almost a reconstitution of the board, where we had two new board members. We had two new board members we announced joined last time, and two new board members joined this time. And essentially, the way we've structured our board now is and again, we've reacted to events rather than proactively doing this. We had one of our senior board members who was with the company for almost 8 years. He decided to move on, and he was the chairman of our audit committee. And similarly, one of the board members who had joined through his network also decided to move on. So we've reacted to those events, but I think our reaction has been strong. With those two board members moving on, what we've essentially done is we've ended up in a very diversified structure, where we've had two new board members who have joined the NRC, which is the Nomination and Remuneration Committee, and each of them have a very strong HR OB type of background. One of them is Achal Khanna, who's the Managing Director of SHRM India and Middle East, so she's very strong in HR, and should benefit us also on the interactive side of our business that actually targets the HR community as a market. And then we've had Jayantika Dave, who's again been a senior and seasoned HR professional. So this really strengthens our, NRC committee that really is focused on, building the next wave of talent and management pipeline for the future. And then we've had two specialists being added to our audit committee. Dr. Piyush Rastogi, who has a very strong accounting background and audit background, which should again significantly help us. And then Mr. Ajay Mankotia, who has been a seasoned tax professional, both on as part of the department, but also on the corporate side as part of NDTV. So there has been churn at the board level. It's been more related to longevity, and I think as MPS we've done very well to react positively to that and end up building something that is a diversified board from a competency perspective. So we have folks from HR, audit, accounting, tax, but also secondly, we now have a 7-member board, and three out of the seven are women. So we've also been more forward looking in that sense. So we are very satisfied with the new composition of the board, and I plan to lean on them heavily in the growth of the business.
Okay, thanks, Rahul. And just one clarification. So on the e-learning side, while you expect the business to sort of come back in FY21, are you still hopeful that you could get back to the 30% plus margins that you've talked about in that business once you get back to the levels in FY21?
Yeah. So we're already operating at about 20%. And I think immediately the jump to 25% to 27% levels is going to be fairly straightforward. Now, from the 25%, 27% jump to 30% is going to be the one that's going to be a bit of a stretch, the last 3%, last 3%, 4%. But we're fairly confident that the jump from 20% to 25%, 27% should be straightforward.
Thanks, Rahul.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Suraj Subramanian from Erevit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rahul. My question is, there are two parts of the commentary that I'm trying to sort of align. On educational publishing, for example, you did allude to a three-year cycle and there being some element of cyclicality. And then there are other parts of the business where it sounds like there's some structural disruption-led events happening with your clients changing the way they do business. So my two questions are, how are you confident that there's still the revenue that you lose as part of these structural events will come back? Because, for example, if an educational publisher who was selling a textbook for $120 now starts doing a $999 login, then obviously that has ripple effects on how their vendors need to be serving them, etc. And second is, how are you going to reshape the organization to be able to adapt to that new world? Because, like you said, there'll be sweeping changes required in terms of how your manpower is organized for that. Thanks.
Yeah, so I'll answer the first question on the as the publisher business model changes, how are we confident that our business will have a positive effect? And I think the biggest reason, of course, is if you look at the subscription and all-access model, what makes that model successful is when you have great content and when you have lots of content. If you look at, whether it's Netflix or Prime Video, it's the content that differentiates them, which fundamentally means that the people that are assembling the content, the people that are authoring the content, then have to, there has to be some, increase in spend, or at least some more organized way of delivering on that. So that's what gives us the confidence. Plus, I think qualitatively, our conversations with some of the existing customers where we've seen the shape on commercials, qualitatively what they're sharing with us gives us more confidence. And also, there are some upcoming RFPs and tenders coming our way, which, we need to go back to our old roots of just being brutal on price and not worrying about, leaving money on the table. I think once we return to that strategy, we're fairly confident that we'll be able to capture some part of that market. So that gives us the confidence. On the organization side, I think the base, the fundamentals are strong. We have a captive, a critical mass of folks in Dehradun. We have a critical mass of teams in Chennai, which are our most competitive centers when it comes to content solutions. In terms of getting that organized, we're fairly organized already. And why we feel confident about delivering to that is because it is always easier to transition new projects into locations versus existing projects between locations. We pulled off some very significant transitions between Bangalore and Dehradun, Delhi and Dehradun, between Bangalore and Chennai. And those have been far hairier because those have been established setups for 20, 30 years versus onboarding an entirely new process or the project into each of these locations. So that gives us the confidence that from a delivery side, we are fairly competent in being able to onboard new projects and new process from a structural standpoint. In addition to that, I think I shared this on the last earnings call that we've strengthened our core management team. we've brought on a new chief operating officer who's helping me on the specifics of the publishing side. We brought on a VP of corporate strategy that is currently owning one of the business units where we are anticipating growth in the future. And similarly, we brought in a VP of growth to help us unlock some of the growth on the learning side. So there has been an upgrade to the management depth of the organization that further gives us confidence. Of course, the more important part, of course, is that structurally we have the delivery capabilities to be able to deliver it through some of these lower cost centers for new projects. But we also have the leadership to help guide and direct once these projects come in.
Great. And as you look ahead to the medium term, you don't see a need to, you're still hoping to get back to those earlier margins that you were shooting for over the medium term, right? I mean, this is just more of a blip. The fundamental unit economics hasn't changed in your opinion.
Yes. In fact, if anything, the way the rupee has depreciated, we should have done better. So I don't see any reason why that would not happen. Of course, because we've had some large events, we had a very tough year this year. We were trying very hard to stay in the same place, but we've seen a slide, a significant slide. And we'll adapt. We've done this before. This is not something we've not done before. It's the same setup. So we're fairly confident we'll get back to where we needed to be. And in terms of new revenue, as it comes in, like I said, transition of new revenue into existing centers is far easier than taking a 20-year setup and trying to transition between centers.
Understood. Yeah. Good luck for the next quarter.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Barjaria from HNI Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the follow-up. So I have two questions again, one on acquisition and one on the platform business. So on acquisition, I would like to bring one of earlier comments made by Nishit on one of the earlier con calls, which is that the question we need to answer in acquisition is how many years we will get our money back post-tax basis. Now, I was just trying to understand that what is our achievement in Element TPS and TSI acquisitions. And because the different parts of the business sits in different companies within the group. So just wanted to understand as to how many years have we been able to recover our money, which we have invested in acquisitions.
Yeah, on the acquisition side, so you're picking up a quote from 6 or 7 years ago. Having said that, the essence of it still remains the same. Typically, I think with smaller acquisitions like Element, EPS, TSI type of acquisitions, we've seen, payback period range from 2 years to 4 years. For example, Think payback period was less than even 2 years. But again, depending on the size of the acquisition, so the larger the acquisition we've seen, the payback period has been higher, but 2 to 4 years is what we're comfortable with, and 5 years is like our cutoff.
Okay. Got it. And on the platform business, given that all the consolidation that is happening in the publishing industry, which will obviously lead to few players within the industry, and we have also seen that our platform business is basically the large players actually prefer their own platform. So isn't it that the target market for our platform business will shrink due to the consolidation or am I not able to understand the business?
The consolidation is taking place between the large publishers. Our target market for our platform business is the medium-sized publisher or the university press or society, where there's very limited consolidation taking place. What's been frustrating, of course, is the speed of the decision-making process because if you were to be slightly more empathetic, the reason that's happening is because, when you're seeing sweeping changes take place around you, you tend to become more risk-averse as a professional. And I think that's what has played out in the short term, that a lot of these publishers that have, that had not made these decisions to switch platforms, if you look at some of their business systems and also some of their, if you look at their tech stack, they're dealing with technology that was that the code was written in the mid-90s, right? So it's definitely irrelevant for them, and they really need to get their act together. From our perspective, you know, we are persistent, and we'll keep at it till the opportunity converts into reality.
Okay, got it. I will come back in the question queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star in one. The next question is on the line of Vaibha Bachadia from HNI Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So on our e-learning side of the market, you know, how much of our business is regulatory driven? You know, for example, in BFSI, there's a lot of regulations are there which require companies to do training. And how much is the discretionary side, both in terms of the market and for our revenue?
So I would say in terms of, you're talking about compliance, training and those type of things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say, you know, and I'm ballparking here, about a third of our business would be compliance related. Where we would be differentiated is that we take the boring compliance training and make it very engaging and interactive. But a bulk of our business would be linked to learning and development. Which is while you're calling it discretionary and a very important part of business.
Okay, interesting. And you know, lastly, it's an observation, not a question. You know, you have been focusing on acquisitions, and there may be true acquisition, and your way is to do revenue rationalization and then moving from there. But another company in IT space, not in exactly publishing domain, which is Sixsoft. They have also been quite recently successful so far in doing acquisitions. So I would urge you to have a look at what they are trying to do and why they are so successful at that. And probably, you know, you might also adopt some of the things from their book.
Could you repeat, please? Sorry, I couldn't hear anything. Your voice was crackling. If you could just repeat what you just said.
Yeah. Okay, yep. From an acquisition point of view, you have been making acquisition, and your strategy has been to do revenue rationalization and then growing the business from there. You know, another Indian company which has been quite successful in doing acquisition kind of a strategy is Sixsoft. And probably you might also look at their strategy and, you know, how they are trying to, how they have been successful, and probably you can also adopt some parts from there. It's just a creation, nothing else. I'm sure you might already be looking at it.
Could you spell that, please?
It's S-A-K-S-O-F-T.
Okay. Yeah, so just to clarify your summary of our acquisition strategy, I think what we've done is we've basically been acquiring assets that have at some point been premier assets in their lifetime and lost their way. Our focus is then being able to take those assets, turn them around quickly from a profitability standpoint, and then bring them back to their old glory. It's not that we look to rationalize the revenue. It's not our goal. It's just that the nature of the asset that we're acquiring is already sliding. And then we start to change the operating model, the revenue ends up sliding further, so at a faster pace. So it's not something that we look to do. It's just a more consequence of the nature of the asset that we're acquiring and the level of activity in the first 6 months. We'll definitely look into what you're describing. We're always looking to learn and do better. But having said that, it's not that we look to rationalize the revenue. It's just we're acquiring assets that are already sliding. And we also then end up acquiring them for a very, you know, competitive purchase price, which is a definite significant variable in the success of any post-acquisition integration. When you're acquiring something super competitive, the pressure on terms of payback period, etc., everything starts to fall in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you everyone for all your insight and also comments and recommendations on how we can better shape our business. Like I stated in my opening remarks, we expect to continue to see this sluggishness into Q4. We thank everyone who's been patient with us through this journey and look forward to FY21 where things start to pick up again. Thanks again.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of MPS Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.